Welcome to Weldcast, a digital project from the High Plains Library District. This project records, documents, and preserves the rich artistic history of Weld County and its residents through storytelling. The stories are stored digitally and are available to all users online at weldcast.com. What you're about to hear is a torch. Not the same kind of torch angry villagers carry to storm a castle, or the kind Indiana Jones might carry through a temple. It's a glass-blowing torch. If you've never seen a glass-blowing torch, it's like this. What looks almost like a tiny cannon is bolted down to the table. The cannon points up at a 45-degree angle, and the flame spouts from the end straight out. On this Weldcast, Jamie sits down with Bryce Huffman, a Greeley resident who blows glass out of his own studio full-time.
So, tell us a little bit about how you got into glasswork.
My parents have a cabin in Estes Park. It was my grandfather's. But since I was a child, maybe 8 years old, we would go up there. And when I found the glass-blowing studio up there, the Estes Park Glassworks. And pretty soon it became a tradition that every time we went up to the cabin, which in the summer was maybe, you know, every weekend, I would have to stop at the glass blowers. And I would sit in there and just watch. The guy's name was Garth. Sit and watch him for hours doing his thing. But I never really had any in. It's a hard industry to sort of get into if you don't know anybody. And I just watched him and then continued my career in education in other fields. And then, I was working at the restaurant when I met this man, Mikey Montgomery, that came from Eugene, Oregon and was trained under, one of the godfathers of our modern lamp working industry. He was one of his official apprentices for about 20 years, and he was just out here in Colorado, and asked him...
Who's the godfather? Sorry to interrupt.
Oh, yeah, Bob Snodgrass is his name.
Bob Snodgrass.
And asked him if he would teach me how to do it, and he did.
Nice. So how old were you when you started visiting the glass studio in Estes?
And like I said, probably 8 to 10 years old.
Okay, so you were pretty young.
Yeah,
so
absolutely.
So this kind of caught your interest very early for an 8 to 10-year-old. That's kind of, and then you were fascinated by it.
Yeah, absolutely. It's just amazing to watch the molten glass and how they work it. And especially being a child and not having much of a voice to ask questions and talk to this man, but just seeing him do these amazing things with molten glass.
You know, it looks like giant globs of honey.
Yeah, yeah.
You got to remember, it's molten.
Yeah.
And they, you know, they're so graceful when they work with it. And can you just talk about the type of glass blowing you do? You were telling me a little bit about this when we spoke earlier. There's sort of like a hand throwing type of glass, and you do a very specific type of glass work.
Yeah, absolutely. When people specifically say glass blowing, they're typically talking about furnace work, or people know it as offhand work. And that's with the giant crucible that has molten glass in it, and the glory hole that's heated it, and the really long, the 5-foot punny that's metal that they use. That's what they call it offhand work, is because you typically rest it on a bench while you're working it. What I do is called lamp working, and it's on a bench. I guess it started scientifically. A lot of universities and lab work and lab utensils and such were created out of borosilicate glass, which is the type of glass that's used in lamp working. And it's sort of evolved maybe in the past 50 years into a more artistic expression than its scientific background.
So the lamp working that you do, when I was watching you do it, it was very focused and very kind of like, in one area, whereas the handheld, what did you call it?
The offhand work?
Offhand work. You know, it seems like you're more in a giant studio space and you're working with all this giant equipment and globs of molten glass instead of, just like a handful of glass like you were working with.
Absolutely, have yeah. The other way that I suppose they break it down is into two basic categories of hard glass and soft glass, and that has to do with the coefficient of expansion of the glass and how long it retains heat. And the soft glass retains its heat a lot longer, so they have the time to be able to get up and walk across the studio before they begin to work it, where the hard glass has a much higher melting point, and it stiffens up a lot faster, so everything's done right in front of you really fast.
And you work exclusively with the hard glass.
Yes.
And that's why you have to have that torch on it almost constantly, it seems like.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
Have you done offhand work?
Yeah, I've messed around with it, but not a lot. Maybe one day's experience.
Oh. And what was your take on the difference, you know, the style of working with that glass?
Coming from the many years that I had lamp working beforehand, it was a completely new experience for me. It was completely different, and I didn't really expect it to be like that. I thought it was going to be real similar, but it was intense pretty much the entire day. I was just trying to hang on to it.
Right. So Bob Snodgrass came to Colorado. You or his apprentice came to Colorado.
Yeah, his apprentice, Mikey.
Mikey.
Yeah.
And you met Mikey, and you said, teach me the ways.
Yeah, basically. I mean, we worked together, so we had a lot of time to talk, but within months after he had told me about his prior career, I actually ended up selling my car and investing all the money in my first year's studio and supplies.
How did your wife take that?
Well, it was really just a hobby at right. the beginning, so it was quite. I still maintain my full-time job working in the restaurant, so it was more of just a hobby that I was just sinking tons of money into, I suppose, at the beginning.
How did glass come up between you and Mikey when you were working at the restaurant? It was just I know restaurant work, you were probably just talking about stuff.
Yeah,
and
that's exactly how it happened. Yeah, just talking on the line.
And you found that he was, but you probably didn't know that he was kind of a big deal back then.
No, I had no idea, to be honest. Like I said, I was sort of into the art scene, but not enough to really know how lucky I was to have come across this guy.
Right.
And yeah, a lot of people thought I was crazy because I had only met this guy and talked to him for about a month and just started investing all kinds of money in this new career. Just was worried a little bit about that, I suppose.
Right.
She's like, do you really think this guy can do all he says he can do? But he could, so right. It worked out real well.
Can you give me and the listeners a little background on the whole Oregon glass scene that this guy sort of, you know, came from, and he apprenticed under Snodgrass? What was his name?
Bob Snodgrass. Yeah,
Snodgrass.
Absolutely. I suppose his main notoriety at the beginning was really introducing a new form of coloration to borosilicate glass using precious metals like gold and silver. And it was sort of simultaneously being discovered in different areas in America at the same time. They were working with it also in California at Berkeley. But he really opened it up and out of, again, that scientific realm of manufacturing glass to the artistic community and started spreading it with everyone. There's also been a real guarded tradition over techniques and such with any type of glass blowing throughout the centuries even. And when there's a fantastic quote, when Bob found this out, he said, wow, you know, I really have something here. Should I, you know, harbor this away and keep this to myself so I have something that nobody else has? And he said, no, I'm going to tell everybody I meet.
That sounds a lot like a superhero or religion origin right there.
Right? So, and he did. Everyone he met, he started teaching his techniques to. And in Oregon, where he was living, there was a group of close friends that studied with him and really brought everything in the industry and fume and color work like that to the rest of the country.
What were people making? So were they just making lamps? Is that where lamp work came from? They were making types of... What were they making?
Well, like I said, mainly at the beginning, a lot of it was designed for lab use, test tubes and beakers and anything
right.
you'd find in a chemistry
right.
lab. And then it branched out into the art industry. And I mean, pretty much most of the things you could make out of soft glass, you can do with boro. So vessels
right.
And there was definitely people out there doing artistic lamp working. The little figurines, you'll see a lot of small figurines and Christmas ornaments and decorations like that. The like a Galileo thermometer is like a good example of something that would be scientific glass then turned into a more artistic approach on something.
Right. And what is that? Can you explain what that is?
It's like a, I don't know, maybe a 50 millimeter cylindrical tube that's sealed with other smaller bubbles of some sort of liquid inside there that then float up and down based on the barometric pressure and temperature.
Can we talk a little about the business side of it? So how have you merged your artistic interest with the business interest? I mean, is that going well? Do you see a future in it? You feel like you can expand doing what you're doing now? How is it working out?
Well, it's working out real well right now. At least in the state of Colorado, we have a huge market demand for pretty much anything made out of glass. And I feel like that will continue. I'm very frugal with my investments in my business, and I feel like that helps me quite a lot. I do have a very, maybe even more so, business mind over my artistic mind, because I will stop myself oftentimes on projects when I don't see there being a high return on it, and or at least put it on the back burner until maybe in the future I have that ability. But yeah, I'm absolutely focused on well, providing for the family right now.
And your products are all over the place now. They're all over Colorado, and you're saying that even out of state at this point?
Yeah. We're in dozens of shops in Colorado, I suppose, and then at least probably 13 other states around the United States.
Right. And is there a state or area that, you know, demands more than any other place at this time?
Well, currently it's Colorado.
Marijuana just became legalized in Colorado. Has that affected your business? I mean, there must be more competition at this point, more people blowing glass, or I mean, it must be a totally different world than how it started back in Oregon.
Yeah, absolutely. That's hard for me to answer just because I am so new at it. And when I started even 5 years ago, recreational was legal. And I had a lot of, or not recreational, but medical was legal. And I had a lot of clients in dispensaries that I was providing for. And I didn't really get to see that other side of it before any of this in Colorado. And I hear the stories from a lot of the old guys, and it just seems like a completely different world for me, or something that I will ever be able to experience. 'Cause even back then, and nobody knew where this glass came from or anything. Someone would have a glass pipe and everybody would want to know where it came from. And some guy would be like, my friend's friend knows this guy that lives out in the woods and he makes them. And it was just so secretive. They were almost like freedom fighters out there underground, like getting their product out to people in any way they can. And I don't think that'll ever be that way again, or that I even came close to being able to experience that kind of thing. It was just already so mainstream when I got into it that it's just kind of here to stay. I have certainly noticed it has brought a ton of people to Colorado, for instance, glassblowers and the like. And that I have definitely seen even in the past 5 years, a huge increase in just maybe my ability to get raw supplies, just because the people that I buy from aren't able to stock because there's such demand for the glass we use now.
That's interesting. So there's been such an influx of glass blowers or people who are using these raw supplies that it's hard for you to get easily these supplies that you normally got just with no problem in the past.
Yeah, definitely. Even, well, the major color companies that manufacture it, and it's not just a thing in Colorado, it's all across the United States, where they just can't keep up with the demand of their product.
That's interesting, huh? Wow. So, and basically you, for you personally, other than getting raw supplies, not much has changed, I'm hearing. So you kind of do your studio work, you have your distributor, and you just kind of let it go, and you just are just in your studio doing your work. So not much has changed for you other than the supplies, getting supplies.
Yeah.
So have you seen more of an acceptance to this kind of work? Seen more, it seems more legitimate to people, it seems more artistic to people, whereas before it was very, almost taboo, you know, to the point where, you know, like the whole Reagan era, just say no to drugs, like anything related to drugs was bad.
Yeah. No, I think it's definitely becoming more common in culture and accepted for a majority of the people. And also, with the legalization of it, it brings the companies that are that guy in the woods into the light that they can legally manufacture a product and have a business in America. And a lot of the new startups are looking for that, whereas before it was a friend of a friend's connection or something, and now companies are looking for legitimate business owners that play by the rules and make a quality product
right.
that they can rely on.
Right. So how big is it now? So I've been kind of looking online and Instagrams, and there seems like there's a ton of glassblowers doing what you do, the lamp work.
Absolutely, yeah. It has really been exploding in the past even 5 years. The 5 years that I've been in it, I've noticed a huge increase from when I started. And really, I mean, at one time in the nation, there was probably 100 people that knew
right.
these kinds of techniques, and I couldn't even begin to guess now
right.
how many across America are actively right. working with glass.
What else is going on in Colorado or even in Weld County that you know of?
That's sort of really hard for me to answer because I'm really not that much on the scene, uh-huh. I suppose. Like I said, I have a family now, and I'm either working or I'm with my family.
Right.
I'm a full-time stay-at-home dad, so
right.
it leaves not a lot of room to be out there on the scene.
Right.
But it is great because there is a lot of, I guess, friendly competition for the most part between people. And I mean, I know a lot of good friends up in like the Fort Collins area, and we look at each other's work. And,
right.
You know, you see what they're doing and you want to do something that's just as nice as what they're doing.
Right.
And it's great because there's a lot of camaraderie on it, too. A lot of these people will just give you their techniques and talk to you. And there's a lot of back and forth, I suppose. Like I was saying, a lot traditionally, it's been really guarded secrets throughout
right.
The ages, and if you have something, you don't want to share it with everybody because then everybody
yeah,
knows how to
exactly.
do it. But it seems like that's changed a lot, even in the past 10 years. And with the internet is a big
nice platform to share information and learn stuff.
That, a lot of these guys back, even when they started 20 years ago, didn't have. So people across the country can bounce ideas and chat with each other and teach each other. And that I like to see, and it's great to have that between friends.
Is there anyone working right now that you know, not personally or just have heard of or seen their work that just blows you away? You look at that stuff and you go, wow.
Yeah, there's probably too many to name. There's quite a few people that
okay.
I have just mad respect for.
And what blows you away about it? Is it the technique? Is it because it's so complicated looking? Or is it just so novel that you're like, how did they do that?
It's really probably a mixture of all of those things, because
mm-hmm.
Well, like I said, and with the share of information, a lot of the technique now is widely known to everyone, so it's more of a matter of how well you can execute that
right.
technique, and then also what you bring to it as well, where it's not simply just copying the technique, but if you can add your own flair into it. And I'm really big on things like symmetry, and I like to see clean, accurate shaping, and just simply clean work.
So attention to craft, really.
Yeah, attention to detail.
Right. You showed me these marbles, and by marbles, they look, they're giant. They're not like little plain marbles, but they're, you know, like a handful. So what are those about, and why do you like making those?
I guess that would be where I put my business interests aside.
Right.
I recently just learned a lot about marbles. I took a class up in Denver at Golden's glass facility, glass crafts, what it called by this man named Freddie Farron, and he exclusively makes marbles. And before I had met him, I really just would do small ones here and there, but it's really turned into my passion with glass, whereas I almost want to put my obligations to the side just so I can make marbles for myself.
And what is it that interests you about marbles?
There's just such exacting techniques and precision in some of the things I have to do that I just have to be so 100% on that if you don't get it right, it just doesn't look the way I wanted the look to achieve, and right. it just continually drives me to do it again and right. try to get that look that I'm trying to achieve, and it's really hard.
Right.
So I keep trying. Sorry. Oh yeah.
Is there a market for those right now, or are they more kind of novelty items, gift items? There's no one. I mean, what?
Yeah, there's absolutely a market for them. There's a high end market for them, however, and that's a lot of the galleries and places okay. like that. The fine art collectors,
I see, right.
Are really more where you're going to sell large marbles. And what I mean by large marbles is anywhere maybe from 2 to 4 inches in diameter. So it's really more of an orb than right. than a marble, a paperweight. So
4 inches, and that's a pretty heavy piece of glass. And
yeah, I haven't done one for it yet.
Right. So is there a limit to what you can do with your lamp work setup for these marbles? I mean, how big can it? Can you make like art size, you know, like a foot in diameter, or is that too big?
That's I can't. Maybe somebody can. Right. Those guys up at that workshop actually did one that was about 6 inches, maybe 6.25 inches.
Right.
And that was pushing the upper echelon of size, just
right.
because I suppose when the glass is cooling, that's what I said earlier is coefficient of expansion, and that's measurement of how much the glass expands and contracts as it's heated and cooled.
Right.
And when you get into something of that diameter, it'll be cooling, and the outside temperature will be so great in comparison to the inside at the core of the temperature that it will expand and contract at different rates and cause cracks and such.
Right.
So people are pushing the boundaries every day, it seems like. I don't know specifically like who or sizes of what, but
right.
when you're getting up there into the 6 or 7 inch size,
right.
It's pretty big.
That's a giant glob of glass to be working with, molten glass.
Yeah,
you know,
yeah.
Right.
It takes you know, half a day easily just to attain heat base in something that size.
Right.
These are huge undertakings when people make stuff to that size.
And what others? And you were making Christmas ornaments.
Yeah, yeah. I'm on the Christmas ornament grind right now. Absolutely.
Christmas
in
time.
December.
Yeah.
yeah.
And you go through those pretty quickly.
Yeah. Yeah. Definitely.
And then talk a little bit about your work day. I know you have like really crazy hours. You wake up early. You have a kid. You're kind of a working stay-at-home dad. And so how do you balance that? What's your day like?
It's really hard sometimes, but well, like I said, in the restaurant, I used to work early mornings. I'd have to get there at 5 and do the par sheets and prep. So I wanted to just kind of keep on with that schedule and not get lazy. When you're running your own business, it's really easy to get lazy and say, I'm taking the day off, or, you know, was the boss going to get mad at me if I'm an hour late kind of
right.
thing? But I kept with that schedule. I get up at like 4 a.m. every day. And it's a little brutal right now in the winter when it's chilly, but in the summertime, it's almost a necessity to work on. Either overnight or you know, early in the morning, just because it's so hot in the studio that I can't work in the middle of the day because the temperatures will exceed 110, 115 maybe when the kiln's running and the torch is on. So out of that necessity and just that was what I was so accustomed to doing, I continued to work super early in the morning. So I work usually 4 to noon, and then at noon my wife goes to work, and then I take care of my son the rest of the day until she comes home. And then we usually have our evening free, which is real nice. So I'll take that trade for having to get up early, at
Absolutely.
Least maybe for another 10 years.
Right. So where do you see this going? Do you have other plans, expansion, or you're just kind of happy doing this for now and just find it still a challenge?
Well, that's kind of a mixed bag. I'd like them both, I suppose, because I am happy with what I'm doing right now, and I would like to expand, but there's always issues with expanding, and I wouldn't want it to cut into my working time, I suppose. I know people that have gone from a single studio, a single station studio, to running a shop, and then you may end up finding you're more focused on running your shop than you are actually working yourself. So I want to stay connected to the glass, and definitely doing it and not more so running a company that produces glass.
So what about it do you like? What about it draws you? Because you've been doing it for years, and I know you punch in like hours every day doing this. Of course, there's the money side. You're making a living. But what drew you to it? And what, you know, you were interested when you were a kid, but what keeps you going now?
Really, it is just so hard.
Oh,
I mean, once you get it, I mean, there are certain things that become more simple, but overall, it's just constantly a challenge for me. I've had a lot of hobbies and activities and jobs that I felt I did really well, and I learned them really well quickly, and then I would typically just get bored of it. And this, I just can't master it. Not a lot of people will tell you that they're a master in this industry, even though based on the opinions of their peers, you'll get that title. But most people will guarantee that they're never probably going to be a master of their trade, that there's always more to learn and that there's always something else. And it could be something that I even do, you know, hundreds of times, and it still takes 100% of my mental capacity sometimes to achieve a desired effect. And it's really, it's driving for me to want to achieve that, I suppose, right. To keep going because it is so tricky.
You can find Bryce and pictures of his work on Facebook. Just search BMH Glass Creations or go straight to facebook.com/BMHGlassCreations. Additional music for this week's show provided by Foolboy Media, Farewell Princess from freesound.org. Thank you for listening to this episode of Weldcast. If you would like more information about the project or you would like to participate, please visit our website at www.weldcast.com or call 1-888-861-7323. This has been a production of the High Plains Library District.